KSIV now presents Encounter, a public service program of Bot Radio Network, dedicated to keeping you informed about the issues that affect your life. Now, here's today's Encounter broadcast.
Leaving your legacy. How important is that to you? And what do you consider your legacy? My guest today, David McIlvaney, is the CEO of the McIlvaney Financial Companies and McIlvaney Wealth Management. But is a legacy only monetary? Let's find out. Let's welcome David on Encounter. I'm Judy Redlich. Stay tuned, won't you? Thanks a lot for joining me, David, on this program. I love to talk about legacies because it's so invaluable that we leave a legacy, isn't it?
It's absolutely critical. Thank you, Judy, for having me on the program today.
What are you talking about when you talk about leaving a legacy?
So many people think that legacy is something that is reserved for an end-of-life planning session where perhaps it's an estate planning issue or left to a will or trust document. And I think the opportunity, if that is the case, the opportunity is missed to see legacy as something that we create every day. It's an expression of our values. It's the actions that we take and the choices that we make, the things that we say yes and the things that we say no to that reflect our culture and the values that we have. And these are the things that are not limited to a particular socioeconomic strata. You don't have to be wealthy to leave an amazing legacy. Your choices matter. Every choice was meant to matter. And that means that what you do today and the trajectory you put yourself or your family on, whether you're single or married or wherever you're at in life, that trajectory setting is really more to the heart of legacy.
It's not writing. It's not doing something great necessarily in the eyes of lots of people either, is it, David?
No, I think where I begin, and perhaps this is with the influence of our wealth management practice in mind, is we look at things from a balance sheet perspective. So what are the assets that you're working with? What are the liabilities that you're working with? The things that would hold you back from personal growth and development, the things that accelerate growth and create opportunities for you to flourish as a human being. These are things that you have to almost do an accounting for in the first place and say, I really do have some hurdles to get over. Or alternatively, I really do have some blessings, whether it's personal choices or, you know, again, maybe it's a spiritual legacy that you received from your parents or grandparents. Mm-hmm. These are resources that come into play as you begin to map out where you would like to be. Now, when I say map out, I actually imagine a culture map where look at your life and you say, what is my identity? What are my values? How do I cultivate the growth and development, the maturation of my heart, of my mind, where you're taking account of all the gifts that God has given you and saying, these things matter. They were meant to matter. God gave me these opportunities. And I think there's an implicit expectation that we do grow more in line with our Creator's image. And so what is it, the choices that you make? What is your life message? If you look at legacy in those terms, now all of a sudden legacy is not, again, that end-of-life bequest, but it's the sum total of your values, the culture, and the aggregate of your choices.
And the life's message should be a consistent one that your family sees, that your friends see, that your associates see, that your work buddies see. Consistency is so important in that legacy, isn't it?
It is. I agree with you, Judy. I think if you said, well, this is really a process of being intentional about where you want to grow and how you want to develop, I think oftentimes we experience things in life that are upsetting to that growth trajectory. And so a part of what I address in the book, The Intentional Legacy, is how to deal with disturbance, things that are difficult in life. That could be health concerns, that could be the loss of a job, that could be a divorce, that could be any number of things. And this brings in the importance of a redemptive ethic, looking to see that which is broken mended. And that is so important because it's not as if we just line up our highest ideals and it's really easy to move from point A to point B. There's so many things that we encounter in life that are a challenge to that. And being able to run that course with a redemptive ethic in mind is really critical.
Now, David, I think back on my dad and how he left that indelible legacy in my life, as well as my mom. And I tried to live out my life going after the values and the cultural milieu that they brought me up in, who makes me who I am today. But you didn't have the best relationship with your dad. So how did you start thinking about this whole legacy thing?
Well, Judy, clearly you're pointing to an issue in the book, which is this is not an academic treatment. This is a very personal look, not only through our wealth management practice where we've had the opportunity to deal with tens of thousands of clients and see what works and what doesn't, but in our own personal life. Really, the epitome of dysfunction as a family. As I was growing up, my dad was the consummate entrepreneur, working long hours. He grew up in a single-family home and recognized the fatherhood aspect as being breadwinner and provider, and wasn't probably aware at that point in his life how important the spiritual and emotional aspects of a family were. Now, of course, he does, but where we began to come off the rails as a family included my personal choices to run away from home. I had a lot of anger against God when my grandfather died and a lot of disappointment in relationship with my dad. Traveled a lot. Traveled as much as 3 weeks out of the month.
Wow.
As he was getting our business started. And so my expression of angst and anger and disappointment and rebellion in those teenage years left me in a youth home, a youth ranch in Arkansas for over a year. And it was on the other side of that that my father and I's relationship found a lot of redemption, found a lot of healing, and it was a game changer for me. One day, I had gotten in massive trouble once again. I had returned home from Arkansas, and I knew that I should have been in really big trouble. And he looked at me. I remember sitting in this booth at Waffle House, and he had every right to sort of unload on me. And instead, he extended me grace, and it broke my heart. It really got to the core of my heart. And I knew from that point forward, I had to make a different set of choices and that I needed to make better choices. So, you know, grace was one of those things that broke in to my life. And I understood it beyond a concept. I grew up in a Christian home. It's not like I hadn't heard of or known of what grace or mercy was, but to be the recipient in a dramatic way was very transformative and set me on a very different course.
Redemptive ethics. That's what you're talking about, isn't it, David?
Absolutely. And this is something that if it's not a part of your culture as a family, we find so many times within the Christian culture that if you're not perfect, you're not welcome. If there's some part of you that is flawed, you're actually encouraged to keep it quiet and keep it to yourself because there are so many unacceptable practices, decisions, et cetera, et cetera. And in our family, we promote a lot of transparency, but you can't expect transparency and openness and dialogue in relationship if you feel like the sword of Damocles is hanging over your head for anything that you might do. So the importance of a redemptive ethic, the importance of seeing that you want to bring healing and bring things together, creating, you know, an atmosphere where God's heart of healing is on display, that is one of the prerequisites for having a real transparent family life and relationship. It's difficult. I mean, would you want to be transparent and open about your deepest struggles if you knew that you would not be welcome without perfection?
And
of course,
right.
That's not the message of the gospel.
Right.
While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. I mean, his love for us was one of those things that preceded and is a part of our encounter. I think the redemptive ethic is absolutely critical.
And I think as you look at being open and honest with your family, with your kids, with your coworkers, it's something that generations before us didn't always do, isn't it?
It's true. I mean, I think there's ways in which there has been a healthy recognition of The importance of our full emotional spectrum and being able to talk about things that relate to whether it's an intellectual challenge that you're trying to wrestle with theologically or a matter of the heart, which is very tender and difficult for you to grasp, and you need help, you know, from friends, family members, to really unpack those things. You're right. In earlier generations, I think some of those things you just kind of kept a stiff upper lip.
In the closet.
Look at our history, hardship. The greatest generation, you learn in the context of whether it's the Depression or a Great War, you don't really complain and talk about the things that are a challenge for you. You must pull it together and keep it together.
Come out on top. And often the challenge is the thing you should talk about because that's what everybody goes through. And if they don't hear that it's been a challenge for everybody else, then we feel like we're missing the boat. Isn't that true?
It is. And I think actually one of the tools of sort of our spiritual enemy is to create a sense of isolation where you're the only one dealing with this.
You know, Dave, let's go into that. Would you join me for another segment?
I'd love to.
All right. David McElvaney is my guest. He wrote The Intentional Legacy. I'm Judy Redlich. This is Encounter. We'll be right back. For more Encounter shows by Judy Redlich, go to judyredlich.com/radio. We're always looking for sponsors for this website and great show ideas. Email me at jredlichspeaks@gmail.com. That's jredlichspeaks@gmail.com. In the St. Louis area, listen to me on Tuesdays, 1:30 p.m., KSIV 95.9 FM, 1320 AM. I'm Judy Redlich. We're back. This is Encounter. We're talking about leaving an intentional legacy. And my guest who wrote The Intentional Legacy is David McElvaney. David, before the break, we started talking about the isolation that people so often feel. I know I feel that sometime in my life, and I'm wondering, do people really understand me? Will my legacy really be the legacy that I'm leaving that I want to leave? Maybe you could address that isolationism that causes us maybe not to leave the legacy that we want to leave.
Well, I see a relationship between what we communicate or don't communicate from one generation to the next, and things that create isolation, whether it's experience of shame or maybe even just not being able to articulate the things that are most important to you, this leads to kind of a perennial problem with legacy, whether it is a financial legacy or one that's more inclusive of things like loyalty and courage and forgiveness and a shared identity. And this issue, they call it in practical terms the shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves problem, where, you know, one generation rolls up their shirt sleeves and gets the work done, creates something, and then by the third generation, there's been an information loss. And that third or fourth generation all of a sudden doesn't appreciate what went into the creation
of
a legacy.
True.
That could be great wealth, or it could be, again, a spiritual legacy as well. And every culture has this. They could call it clogs to clogs if you wanted to head overseas or rice patty to rice patty, but it's the same thing universally where something happens to either break a relationship, break a home, break a communication, and then all of a sudden there's misunderstanding and that sense of isolation where, again, I think you could boil it down to communication failure. Yes, there's generational differences, but at the heart of it, you're talking about broken relationships. So bringing relationships back together again has to be a priority in the context of setting a proper trajectory for a legacy.
How do you bring relationships together again? I'll preface that by saying we just had our Schlimpert family reunion. That's my maiden name. And we had about 50 people there. And this is the second one we've had in about 10 years. And we're going to have one 2 years later. But It's great to see everybody and reminisce on that day, but it's like nobody communicates really between the reunions. So that communication piece, am I hearing you say, is the legacy we need to continue to build on?
Yeah, and in fact, when we talked in the first segment about a culture map, this is where I think when you start looking at your daily activities and the things that you commit to, the things that you say yes or no to, you are talking about the things that provide opportunity for conversation. So, for instance, maybe it's having breakfast every morning together as a family, or maybe that doesn't work because of a work schedule, but in the evenings, you're intentional about having dinners together. Well, it's time spent, yes, that's good, and it's a great meal, and perhaps that's the way you kind of celebrate simple things in life, but there's also an opportunity there for you to look at the things which your family is engaged with. What are the books they're reading? What's the poetry that they're engaged with? Mm. What are the things that allow for conversation to happen? And one of the things, very simply, we do every dinner is ask our kids, what was your happy today? What was your glad or your sad, if you want to create that?
Do they really answer that question? Or do they say, I don't know?
No, every day. Every day we talk about it was basically the high point of the day and the low point of the day.
But did they answer that? Were they able to answer that honestly, or did they tell you, oh, I don't know?
No, from age 13 down to 5, everybody has an audience, and everybody has something to say. In fact, when you invite that kind of discussion, what I find is that you can't get them to be quiet. Everybody likes having the audience and wants to talk. So you'll create opportunities for conversation, and maybe it's of a personal nature. You're glad and you're sad, and maybe it's talking about the book that you're reading. And or as a parent, one of the things that you think is really important from something that the Lord is sharing with you or opening up for you, or maybe it's just a fun activity. What do you like to do? Is it board games once a week? I know on Friday nights, we like to have movie night, and we have pizza and root beer floats. And I tell you what, this is a marker. Every week, they look forward to it. They expect it. When it's not there, they feel the loss and the absence of that routine, and that has become a part of our family culture. But it also is one of those things, back to your point, Judy, it creates the opportunity for conversation and time spent and relational connection, which is so critical.
Now, we talked about the family and creating those times. That is so important. We worked really hard at doing that as well. My mom and dad in their generation worked hard in keeping their generational family structure together with all the relatives. And we've been trying to do that in our generation to keep that together. But how do you do it when everybody's so spread apart? And people don't get together as family groups generationally as much as they used to.
It's a real challenge, Judy. I mean, we have families spread out all over the place. My family is a perfect case in point. When I took over the family business back in 2008, my parents moved to the Philippines. They work with villages in the Philippines, and so to stay connected is a challenge. My brother runs a couple of different businesses in Indonesia. My sisters live other places in the United States, and it is a real challenge. So I don't know that I have a great answer for you. Certainly technology, whether it's using Skype and being able to do video calls, these are things which close the gap to some degree. But I'll be honest with you, the greatest family connections are the things that happen incidentally. The fantastic conversations are the ones that happen unexpectedly because of the routines in life that have knit you together. So I think, frankly, that the larger nuclear family, that remains a challenge, but the smaller, where I have time with my wife and kids every week, this is where you get those breakthrough moments in conversations because of the routines that tie your life together.
That tie your
life together. I'm afraid I don't have a great answer for you when it comes to the extended family. We're working on it.
And one of the other things you mentioned in your book, The Intentional Legacy, is giving children freedom to fail. How does that fall into legacy?
Well, it absolutely ties into legacy, because what we're doing is we're essentially creating the opportunity for them to grow. And we don't grow just by our successes, but through reflecting on the things that we can do better or could have avoided altogether. So part of that is our transparency with them. We're not perfect, and they know it. They see it on display every day. So if you think that you're sort of the Superman and maintain hero status because of perfection, that's not correct. Kids know what you don't do well and what you do well, and they still keep you in an elevated superhero status regardless of your imperfections. So being able to bring those into conversation is really important. It also gives them the freedom to deal with their own imperfections. And what a great place to learn and to grow and to dialogue, the home, where there is redemption, there is an ethic of grace, and you know, for them to be able to be prepared for life, to have failed in the small things so as to not go into the world unprepared for dealing with those challenges. I think of David, this biblical figure who was far from perfect. In fact, if you look at any of the great heroes of faith that are listed in Hebrews, this is not a list of perfect characters.
Right.
They're flawed and they're imperfect. And how great would it be if you and I, with our kids and grandkids, could mentor them through the hard times and prepare them for making better decisions. We have this phrase in our family, we like to ski in the wintertime, and when you fall, the question is, what do you do next? And the answer is, you get back up again. But we have this idea of an indomitable spirit where, yes, you fall, and yes, you get back up again. Mm-hmm. And spiritually speaking, we absolutely have that on display with the list of heroes of faith.
That's right. And it's so great that we can look in God's Word and see those spirits of don't let go. You know, we're just going to keep on keeping on. Even in the generations where Abraham didn't see all the promises, but the generations to come saw those promises. What great legacy examples God's Word gives. And as we talk about legacy, you also talk in your book, Intentional Legacy, about having a family mission statement. What is that all about?
Well, sure. I mean, if you don't know where you're going, any train will get you there. And I think this is really to the point of, where is your family going? What are your priorities? When you are in the day-to-day saying yes to this or no to that, is there a guiding set of principles that sort of define and say, this is who we are. This is what we want to do. This is an expression of, and maybe this is you dialing in what your family's expression of compassion looks like within your community. Perhaps it is that you are a reading family and you prioritize dialogue and discussion. What are the things that you value most? Making sure that you have that written down as almost a code of conduct or family motto or family code allows you to say and orient the decisions that you make according to your priorities.
David McElvaney has been my guest. We've been talking about his book, The Intentional Legacy. David is the CEO of the McElvaney Financial Companies and McElvaney Wealth Management. But this is not just talking about money management. It's also talking about leaving a lifelong legacy for generations to come. David, how can people get a copy of your book, The Intentional Legacy?
We have everything on Amazon.com. DavidMcElvaney.com is a website that gives you a few blog posts here and there. And if you're ordering lots of copies, probably cheaper to do it there. But Amazon will give you everything from the book to a study guide, which allows for a broader discussion with friends and family or a church group, and to really kind of dig in and discuss. There's some other resources there you'll find on Amazon as well.
And you probably hear him on the radio weekly as he talks about market commentary with world leaders. I'm Judy Redlich. Thanks so much for joining me for Encounter, and thank you all for tuning in too.
Encounter is you and the issues, where the facts and opinions make you an informed citizen of St. Louis. Thank you for your participation. Let a friend know about this talk and issues feature of Bot Radio Network and KSIV. Then join us next time for Encounter.